to Local Motion, KVNF's weekly public affairs program. I'm Jody Peterson. Colorado's North Fork Valley is well known for its small farms, producing some of the state's finest fruits, vegetables, and meats. KVNF visited one such small farm earlier this summer, Deer Tree Farm near Hotchkiss. It's owned by AJ and Nicole Carrillo, a couple in their early 30s. The Carrillo's operation is an agroforest, a type of farming system that integrates trees with livestock, forage, and perennial crops. Deer Tree produces agricultural products including heritage pork, peaches, vegetables, flowers, and alfalfa. On a hot and sunny morning in July, AJ Carrillo was feeding a pen full of pigs, including a handful of extremely cute piglets.
Our main breed is Cooney Cooney, and that's a New Zealand grazing hog. They're pretty much the Maori village pig, and Cooney Cooney means fat, fat in Maori, and they are. They're just these round bowling balls of pigs.
As we stepped away from the pigs, I asked AJ Carrillo to tell me more about Deer Tree Farm and the philosophy behind his operation.
You know, this is our fourth season on the farm here. And we're getting the hang of it. We're getting on a roll. We're a small, diversified farm operation. So we have a half-acre market garden. We have a small grass alfalfa field. We have a 20-year-old, 5.5-acre peach orchard. And then the back 7.5 acres, just last year we planted it into a diversified perennial agroforestry system. And so this farm is a diversified small family farm. We're on 18 acres here, and as you can tell, you know, we're doing a little bit of everything. We have our vegetables, we raise hay, we also raise turkeys, laying hens, and we're looking to get some meat birds next season as well. And, you know, there's a lot of complexity that goes into that kind of a system. A lot of moving parts, and with all soft, complex systems, when you do anything, you change anything, unintended consequences is the norm. And so that is what we're dealing with all the time. We're just constantly, okay, what's this going to do? What kind of an effect is this going to have? And, oh, no, I didn't expect that. So that is certainly a challenge, but it's also really exciting and really fun. Regenerative agriculture is the cultivation of our food in a way that not only benefits us as human beings, our health, is not only profitable and provides a good livelihood, but while achieving those goals is also benefiting the ecosystem itself, also benefiting the environment in which we live. And so we call that the triple bottom line. Care of the ecosystem, care of the ecology, you know, then there's care of the society, and then there's the profitability or the economy. And when we take care of all three of those aspects of the system, that supports a regeneration of health within the system. So we have our perennial crops, and we can talk a little bit more about that agroforestry system. It's diversified, so there's many different crops within that system. There's fruit trees and berry bushes and herbs, as well as nut trees varieties that I'm working with and looking to start breeding over time. Our animals are then integrated into those tree systems. And so you'll see when you look up agroforestry practices, they are farming practices integrated with trees. And so we practice silvopasture, which is running animals in with our trees. We do that with our peach orchard as well, where at the end of the season, after we've been picking fruit and, oh, that's not a good one, just throw it on the ground. And if I were to just leave that, it would breed brown rot and, pest larvae and things like that. So we release the pigs and we send our pigs out into the orchard and they go through and they eat up all those old fruits. They keep it really nice and clean. They fertilize, with their droppings and their urine. It's the same thing with any animal system when it's managed in a what's called a holistic way, looking at the whole system and observing what impact they have on the land, what they're doing. And so that's basically what we're doing in general, is observing what our impact as animals within the ecosystem is on the land and striving to have a positive, beneficial impact.
So this sounds, in a lot of ways, like it's quite different from the usual approach to agriculture.
Modern, conventional, industrial agriculture. It fits perfectly into the value set of our civilization and society as a whole, where it is about maximizing profits. And when you have one bottom line, profit, and that is what you're going for, and everything you're doing is focused on that goal, then everything else suffers, is degraded as a result of that. What I see as the difference between that conventional industrial model of profit, of that corporate fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to provide profits, is to take the economic model and fit it where it belongs in that holistic system, that profits are providing a service to the ecosystem and to the community, where I need my business here to be profitable. But what I'm also realizing is that when I benefit the soil, when I build soil, when I raise healthy animals, when I raise healthy vegetables, that health, those nutrients, that nutrient-dense food, I then get to receive that. When I sell it to my community, they get to receive that, and they reciprocate with the financial benefits to me and my family, and then I can take those resources and put it back into the ecosystem, into that building more soil. And I think that that's the difference right there between what I call regenerative agriculture and the, just status quo agriculture right now, is that it's an extractive process where it's about extracting all of the resources from the natural world and getting them at the lowest possible cost so that we can sell it to the most amount of people at the highest possible scale and get the largest profit margin and just keep doing that. But what we see with those complex soft systems is that when we treat them like hard, complicated systems, we get unintended consequences. And so, whereas the common model right now is all about make it simple, make it easy, make it convenient so it can be profitable, we're seeing all these unintended consequences.
So you see unintended consequences with regenerative agriculture too, but I imagine that they are of a different scale and a different type of unintended consequence.
That's right, because what we see with regenerative agriculture is that if we're looking to benefit the whole system, then that as our goal, that as our value set, that is the driving force behind what we're doing, those consequences start to get absorbed. And instead of having, we have all of these pests, it's a huge problem, we need to spray pesticides. Instead, you look at it in a more holistic sense and you realize spraying pesticides is addressing a symptom of a larger ecological problem. So if we look at it in terms of natural ecosystems, because that's what we're doing in agriculture, is we're managing ecosystems. And we come into an existing ecosystem and we change it, we manage it. So if we start to shift our paradigm a little bit and realize that that's what we're doing, we're working within a larger ecosystem and we're managing an ecosystem, then we can look at that pest problem and we can look at the natural counterparts in the world and say, oh man, if there's way too many bugs, that usually means there's too few birds. And so I can take that pattern that I see in nature and I can apply it to my farm, and I can run a bunch of turkeys. I can run a bunch of broilers through chicken tractors. I can run an egg laying operation. And while they're creating revenue streams for me through their eggs, through their flesh, they are solving an issue for me. They're now managing pests and disease pressures for me. They're now fertilizing the whole system for me. And while they're providing that service for us, with us, they benefit. They have a relaxed, healthy, nutritious life.
Right. They're not confined in an industrial-sized building indoors.
And they're providing those ecological services. And then I get to take all of that goodness and share it with my family and my community.
I think probably a lot of people would be familiar with Joel Salatin and Polyface Farm. And so is that kind of the same?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He is an inspiration, you know, and he's one of the most famous farmers in the world. And I love that. You know, why not? Why aren't the people providing the lifeblood of our communities, feeding our children, why aren't they the rock stars? Why aren't they the heroes?
Yeah, and the teachers, and you know, all the people that are the foundation of our society.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, to look at his lifestyle and, you know, his jovialness is an inspiration. To look at other mentors and teachers that we have in the regenerative space, Mark Shepherd, you know, 100 acres of diversified agroforestry systems that require almost no inputs. And he's just doing great. It's a beautiful place. It's an inspiration to us to see, oh, it's possible. It's functional. It's providing a really healthy livelihood. All of those people I just mentioned, it's that way for them because they're providing services and it's so abundant. Their systems, like all natural systems that we see when they're in harmony and in balance, are so abundant that they're getting all of their needs met and they have extra.
So what is your background? How did you come to be interested in regenerative agriculture?
You know, when I was a kid, my dad and I would garden, and I just have such wonderful memories of that. Just, you know, he never was like, you got to weed this, you got to do that. No, it was, you know, hey, you want to go pick some carrots? You know, oh, yeah, you bet. You know, so I have such wonderful memories of being in the garden with my dad. And when I graduated from University of Colorado in Boulder with a humanities degree, I, you know, super inspired, making all these connections in the world, and I had no idea what to do. So I started gardening, and I started a gardening business with my then girlfriend, now wife. And the following season after that, I had an opportunity to work on a farm over in Boulder with one of the foremost seedsmen and farmers in the area, Rich Pecoraro. And just what a wonderful experience, an amazing mentor. And I got to see the abundance of people who know how to take care of soil and raise food in it, and just the delicious food. I mean, I was totally blown away, totally inspired. I loved that way of life, of working with the ground, of eating, of bringing that food to my wife. We're caterers as well, so I could take that food and share it, and just seeing people light up, seeing that good feeling come about at these events that we were catering was really inspiring to us. But then what happened was that we started moving to bigger and bigger operations, and I ended up on this huge organic farm, one of the largest organic operations in Colorado, and they're doing a great job of that. But what I witnessed was like, yeah, it's organic agriculture, but there's 20 acres of cabbage and just kale, and it's, you know, tilling the ground and then toiling to keep the weeds down and planting them, and just all of the work that went into it was just extraordinary. And I got injured, and I started really going downhill for my own personal health and mental health. Really, I really had to take a look at what I wanted to do and if I wanted to farm at all. And it was around that time that I started looking more into permaculture and looking into a philosophy of living in harmony with the earth, with each other, and with ourselves, and being of benefit, being not like a locust on the planet, but like a honeybee, you know, that me living my life and providing for my own needs could be of benefit to the rest of life. And that really touched something deep inside of me. And I started looking around for, well, who's doing that on a large scale? Who's doing farm-scale permaculture? I started seeing a lot of small backyard, you know, quote, permaculture projects. And that's good. That's nice. But I wanted something meaningful. I wanted to see landscapes transformed for the benefit of humans in nature's image. And that's when I found Mark Shepherd on 100 acres growing chestnuts, hazelnuts, with beautiful apples and plums and cows and chickens and pigs and elderberries, and he's turning a profit, and he's also doing annual vegetables, you know, growing cabbage and squash and peppers and cash flowing the system to buy more trees. And I said, well, that's what I've been looking for, that's what I want. So I went and I took my buddy Jake, who's up at Cedar Springs Farm up the road from us, he and I drove to Kentucky, and we went to this workshop over there, and, you know, just kind of got our minds blown. And within the next 6 months, we both had farms. And then that's where I started to look around for more people, you know, Joel Salatin, Richard Perkins, all these different ones, Gabe Brown, and started seeing, like, not only are people are doing this on large-scale projects successfully. I said, that's what we're going to do.
So at that point, did you come out to Hotchkiss and buy this farm? I mean, what brought you out here?
So we were looking for a farm, you know, even though we were totally burned out by that large organic farm, we kept on saying, like, well, we can do it. We can make it work. We want to give it a shot. We want to try to make it work and do it in a way that really feels good and is in alignment with our values. And so we were looking all over the Front Range. And the issue that we had there was not just the high prices, but it was also the lack of irrigation water, made it really difficult to farm without water. And it's the one nutrient that plants and life can't live without. And so we came over here and started seeing the potential.
So how has it worked out? I mean, economically, has it provided the kind of living for your family that you'd hoped it would?
It's coming along, you know, but I've never managed a peach orchard. I've never managed a hay field. I've never managed animals before. This was all very, very new. So if I were to do it again, I probably would have taken some time to go work on some farms that were doing what I thought I was going to do, that I wanted to do. That is what I recommend to folks nowadays. It's like, oh, you want a farm? Great. What do you want to do? Who's doing it successfully, and can you go work for them? And just get trained up, you know, learn their systems, learn how to do it. So we got here, and we're just like, great, let's do this. And we have all these ideals and all these, you know, ideas. And we started rolling at it, and it's been growing us up. And the reality of being a business owner, we've owned businesses in the past, but very different from being the business owner and the head technician, the manager, the labor force, the plumber, the irrigation guy, everything on this huge, it's 18 acres. It's not a huge property, but it is for two people. And so it's the first 3 years were really intense, really, really intense. And I'm happy to say, we broke even our first year, and we were profitable by our second year. And I'm really proud of us, and I can see the toll that it took on us to do that without a proper business plan, without really thinking it through ahead of time. it took a lot of hustle, and we were burned out every year for the last 3 years. And so I'm happy that now we're kind of hitting our stride a little bit better. You know, we have cultivated a client base and a market. We're getting the hang of our systems. We've installed essential infrastructure. And so these are the things that any farm needs to do. And we did it, but it was kind of the hit the ground running, figure it out as you go kind of a scenario. And now that we have that foundation in place, I feel much more confident that we can reach more people. We can cultivate a really healthy market, local market, and start providing our produce and our services to our market, and that it will start to become a little bit more easeful. And that's been the trajectory so far. So I feel very optimistic about it, being able to achieve our goals without just burying ourselves every year.
If you're just tuning in, this is Local Motion on KVNF. And this week's program features an interview with A.J. Carrillo of Deer Tree Farm. During my visit, A.J. and I walked across the farm through the peach orchard to a set of white irrigation pipes. A.J. began opening a series of small gates in the pipe to let water gush onto the orchard and then explain more about the farm's goals.
So we just close these gates that are now no longer flooding because we opened that set. We won't have the water to grow the crops the way that we were hoping to. You know, we'll be able to grow homestead crops, and we'll have some overwinter.
What are homestead crops?
Oh, that's what I call our personal garden to get us through the winter, where I overwinter carrots and beets and leeks, and we grow a bunch of squash, and it's all just the crops that are used to feed us. You know, one of our main goals on this farm is to provide for our own food needs. I think that a lot of farms, it's kind of the opposite, where it's provide for your customer base and then whatever is left over you get to enjoy. We're really interested in providing for our own needs so well that we are able to sell. And our goal is to get further and further down that road, where eventually we'll have my dream achieved of perennial staple food crops. And that means complete proteins grown on woody perennial crops that once they're planted, you don't need to plant them again. They're just going to grow, get bigger, improve in health, improve the soil health, provide ecological services, shade, windbreaks, air purification, water purification as they mature. And then over time, I can breed those crops in order to be more adapted to our environment so that they require less inputs from us.
So what are some examples of those kind of perennial food crops? You'd mentioned nuts.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Well, that's kind of, you know, when I tell people, they always kind of look at me like, wait, really? Yes. Chestnuts are basically brown rice on trees. And staple carbohydrate. Hazelnuts are basically like soybeans on steroids on a tree. It's your protein and oil. So together, hazelnuts and chestnuts make a staple food. Hazelnuts and chestnuts also require acidic soil. We have alkaline soil. They also require about 30 inches of rain a year. We have about 12 inches of rain a year. But we're irrigating. So I think, over here, we're just walked by this agroforestry system, and there are hazelnuts and chestnuts planted out there right now. And the goal is, if I can get them established, the ones that survive will eventually bear fruit. And from those fruits, from those nuts, those seeds, I can plant those, propagate those, and begin the long-term breeding project of creating bioregionally adapted nuts for our area.
Wow. So your intention is to create a variety of hazelnuts or a variety of chestnuts that can actually grow in a climate with 12 inches of rain a year
and alkaline soils. Exactly. Exactly. Wow. I mean, it's a long-term project, but plant breeding has been occurring for the history of humanity. That's what we do. It's part of what we do, how we interact with our landscape and our ecosystem. So when you work with those plants intentionally, they kind of become like plastic in your hands, you know, and not too many generations. The plants that survived here, they start producing nuts that were more adapted to this area, and then you keep selecting. What are the healthiest ones? What are the ones that are pest and disease resistant? Which are the ones that are frost and drought tolerant? What's the one that has the biggest crop with the biggest nuts? And you start selecting for those trees, and over time, that's what you're going to get more and more of.
So I take it nobody else has done that successfully.
No one's tried over here. And that's what it takes. It takes, honestly, if we had everybody in this area take a tenth of their property, a tenth of the orchards, and started doing intensive breeding programs with staple food crops within a relatively short period of time, I'm talking one generation, two generations of humans, we could have that goal, that mission achieved and accomplished. So it takes kind of kooky guys like me and regenerative folks who are like, yeah, I want to grow nuts in the desert. You know, that's what it takes. But I also just want to say too, that we're talking about, you know, trees that don't really grow here, but that have been bred and adapted over time. We're doing the same thing with our peach crops, our plums, our cherries, you know, are apples and pears. These are not native species, though native prunuses do grow here, your choke cherries, your wild plums, your sand cherries. So they're a great example of a good crop to work with in our ecosystem because they already exist in our ecosystem. The chestnuts are in the Fagaceae family. Fagaceae is chestnut, beech, and oak. Do we have any oaks here? We happen to have an entire ecosystem that's almost completely dominated by gamble oaks. So I'm not way off base, you know. They already exist in our ecosystem. I'm just working with a variety, a breed, a species within that family that is not seen here, but I know I can work with it. And I know that over time, with that human ingenuity and that dedication and that intention, and that selection, which is what we do with our annual crops and all of our perennial crops, all of our food crops. Our annual crops come from weeds that were selected over time by our ancestors to give us aroma tomato.
Yeah, look at how much corn has changed.
Oh, man, in a short period of time, and not that long of time. It just takes that intention and that working with it. I know that we can achieve that goal of having staple food crops grown perennial here in our climate with the dream, with the vision, with the goal that if we have any more issues with our water, you know, God willing, we'll always have good water here. But if there's issues, if we have droughts, climate weirding occurring to the point where it gets drier here, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if we were working towards a goal of having crops that could handle it? If we were working with systems that harvested every drop of water from the sky and concentrated it at the roots of our trees, wouldn't that be nice if we were just a little having that proactive approach? And so that's really where we're coming from. It's a little kooky, but it's that long game. It's not that short-term gain, that myopic business view. It's more of a holistic, long-term, intergenerational thought process where, gosh, I just dream of my grandkids picking food off the trees that I planted, you know, their grandkids having that for themselves, to have that economic opportunity, to have something to contribute to their health, their livelihoods, their well-being. That's where I go with all of this. I'm thinking that kind of long term. And so it's taking a little bit of work up front. Absolutely. It's going to take work. But over time, the dream is that this becomes an agricultural ecosystem, self-sustaining, minimal to no inputs from us. We don't maintain anything. We manage it. We take care of it. We're stewards of it.
That was A.J. Carrillo giving us a tour of his Deer Tree Farm. This edition of Local Motion and many others can be found at kvnf.org. I'm Jody Peterson, and thanks for tuning in.